Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast, episode number 242, joining you on a Wednesday night. And it's actually Thanksgiving Eve, so we will call this the Thanksgiving Eve special. And tonight, you just get a dynamic duo of co-hosts for the evening. It will be myself, Stephen Zimmer, broadcasting with you, as well as the one, the only, Daniel Dark, who is joining me right now out of Tennessee. Hello, Mr. Dark. Good evening, my friend.
It is a great evening, and we are, you know, grateful for it. You know,
yes.
If you can't be grateful for being alive, just be grateful that you're not dead.
Yes, that's a good point. And I'm definitely grateful for all of you that are listeners of the show, for sure, because that's why we do it. You know, here on 242 episodes along, it's quite a lot, and definitely have had a lot of amazing guests, also thankful for. And then, of course, our amazing sponsor family who definitely make the show possible. So, and it's going to be a really cool night. We're going to have a great guest for you on our Thanksgiving Eve special, and we're going to get into a lot of topics with this guest tonight, a lot of very multifaceted type of guests, and I'm going to enjoy tonight for sure, because I know tomorrow is always an adventure. Thanksgivings are always an adventure, but I do have the cats with me tonight, so you never know if they may make a surprise comment on the show, and Victoria and Albert are actually with me right now to speak, so who knows? We may have some extra co-hosting. You never know, Daniel.
Well, that'll be fine. It'll be perfect, you know, for anything like that. So,
yeah, they're looking pretty eager. Yeah, definitely. I don't know. Was not able to have enough microphones for them, but they'll probably just commandeer the one I have here. But it's been a whirlwind of a week getting to Thanksgiving for me. It's been like a blur. So I hope that your week has gone a little bit saner because, of course, at the beginning of the show, we'd love to touch base among our co-hosts and find out what's happening in our crazy worlds. But for me, it's been a lot of writing, and of course the topic of the week. We recently had Michael Houchin on the show, and Mr. Houchin was award-winning thriller and author who we had, I think, about two episodes ago. And his brand new book that we talked about on that show, Death of Innocence, actually came out today. So it is available in print, in ebook formats, Kindle, Kobo, iTunes, Nook, and then, of course, you can get it at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, but great book, great book. And it is a standalone book, but it's part of like a franchise of characters that he has that were debuted in Tybee Island, H-Bomb. And so this is kind of, in a way, a follow-up. So if you've read Tybee Island, H-Bomb, you'll have great familiarity with the characters, but it's a whole new adventure, whole new thriller, a story, and lots of twist turns and great humor too, and just a really fun book. And this one involves my home state, Franklin, Kentucky, and has the great Kentucky Downs course track in it, a little thoroughbred fun. So it's got some stuff that's on a little more of the personal side as far as things that I'm very familiar with. But yeah, definitely check it out, folks. It's a Michael is a superb author, and he's really, I think, his first book was an award winner, Tybee Island H-Bomb, and I think he's really gonna make some waves, and this is gonna be a really good addition to his catalog. So that is out. So that was taking up time of mine, and of course, you know me, editing, writing, all that fun stuff. But about sums it up. So. There you go, Daniel. You're up to speed on me.
Very good.
As you
Very
sit
good.
In the trolley. And you sit in this awesome trolley that we're all like like waiting with bated breath to get to see it at some point. So, and
just
and you continue to make progress.
Doesn't mean your breath is bated.
That's a good point. But still, I'm really looking forward to it. And happy Thanksgiving to Sandy Lender, who's just joined us in the chat room. And definitely grateful for you, Sandy. Yes, grateful for you, Sandy. You're awesome. It's quiet so far, folks, in the chat room. Yeah, so definitely if you are listening tonight, I know it's a holiday week, but definitely log in because we definitely want to get questions, comments, all that kind of good stuff for our guests, and we got a good one. Oh yeah, Sandy wants an official trolley update. Is the trolley complete? She wanted to ask you, Mr. Dark.
The trolley is not complete yet. I just got word today that my humidor will be here Monday, and I can get that installed and get that part of it done. I've still got a few other things I've got to get done. Like I've got an air conditioner that's still sitting in the floor of the trolley. He still hasn't been installed. And the person that told me they were going to come install it, I haven't heard from. So, you know, that's just part of life, but, we're going full bore ahead and, you know, battening the hatches and let's do this thing.
Heck yeah. And Sandy wanted to pass along that she loves that you're putting in a freaking humidor. So there she is, definitely wanting you to know that. That's fantastic.
A freaking.
That's her words.
I've got one humidor in here, but my big one it's been about 2 months since I paid for the humidor, and it finally left Florida this week or this last week.
Nice.
It left Florida Monday and will be here Monday.
Be here Monday. All right. Well, that's just right coming out of the holiday weekend. Good timing.
Yeah.
Good timing.
It would have been better timing if it had been here Monday, but, you know, Tel Aviv.
Right.
You know.
I know I go sometimes, man. Definitely.
I went ahead and put in all my cigar orders and had all them sitting in the humidor by Friday.
Right.
So I could do Black Friday.
Yep. Yeah, I know Holly is possibly going to venture out to do some, take advantage of some of those Black Friday sales. You know, she's got to finish up some Christmas shopping. And I'm I don't like going out shopping not too much on those days. So I may get dragged along. I may not. Well, we will see. And I will definitely give you a report if I have to hit Black Friday. But that's this year. It's they've started because the whole, pandemic fund, they've actually, most of the stores have kind of already gotten underway with their quote unquote Black Friday sales. So it's not necessarily going to be, I guess, a 5 a.m. madhouse, but, and I definitely don't think Holly's going to get up that early, but if she is, I may pass completely, but it's no desire to get in that crazy
stuff.
Actually
wanting to have a Green Friday, but you know.
Yeah. I'd like a Amber Friday, as in the usual color of bourbon. That would be a great Friday for me, but
I was thinking money Friday.
Yes, that would be nice too. Absolutely, and yes, Sandy does reminded me that yes, NaNoWriMo is actually on the home stretch. Yeah, they finished the whole thing next Monday. Yeah, Monday's the last day of November. So, she is doing a poetry marathon within NaNoWriMo Friday. Definitely wish best wishes to all of you who are participating in NaNoWriMo. Hope you all hit your goals. And if not, I hope it's been a very positive experience, and at least, you know, those important lessons that we talked about in our NaNoWriMo special kind of got across to you about, competing with yourself, the importance of writing regularly, and all those kind of very positive things that you can take from this event and go forth with. So definitely hoping everyone is doing well that is participating. And also Sandy is passing along that she's the Rural King down there. I love Rural King. It's a great store. There's one real close to here. It's got a chicken coop on sale. So yeah, Sandy's going prepper. She's going to get her chicken coop going. So looks like that's a cool thing. I think I mentioned on a show, but we're allowed to have up to 40 within the Lexington city limits in Kentucky. And I think, there's a list of other creatures that you can have legally on your property. I mean, talking like, you know, even if you live in a suburb, but yeah, you can have up to 40 chickens. So, we may have to go that route sometime. I don't know just yet, but that would be nice to have fresh eggs.
Chickens and stuff, because I've got two neighbors, as long as they don't keep a count of how many chickens they've got, I've got chickens.
Nice. Yeah. And Sandy is asking if I can have a rooster in Lexington. You know what? Legally, I don't think they have it listed whether or not you can have a rooster. Now, there is somebody in our neighborhood that most definitely has a rooster because, oh, yes, you can hear that rooster in the morning. So not obnoxiously. It's not sort of thing that's going to wake you up unless you'll hear this rooster if you're outside your house. But it's somebody in our neighborhood does have a rooster, and there's at least two or three neighbors in my immediate, like within a block or two, that do have chicken coops. So, yeah, it's becoming a popular thing. And the whole idea of good organic fresh eggs, you know, that's definitely worth it, because if you've seen the prices in stores and our organic and grain fed and, you know, free range chicken eggs, I mean, it definitely will take care of itself if you harvest those every day. And Sandy's also
fresh chickens and chicken eggs and everything from sort of backyard.
Yeah. Nice. Very nice.
I'll tell you what, in my yard, I just harvest me a chicken and
RC chicken. Nice. That's how he gets his organic chicken. That's beautiful. Oh man. But let's go ahead and make sure that we acknowledge our sponsors on the Thanksgiving Eve special, a very important thing to do. We've got two great ones. We got one, both of them are presses. And one of them has a great product for other presses and authors. And, of course, that's Jump Master Press with Jump Card and Jump Card ID. Definitely give a shout-out to Gene and Kyle. Great guys. Great product. And as we hopefully get some more live events going, something every single author out there wants to check out. But here is a little about Jump Master Press.
Attention, authors. Stop sending ebook readers away empty-handed. With the Jump Card ID, sell your books directly without the need for an online retailer. The Jump Card instant download exclusively from Jump Master Press could be your ticket to more sales, more readers, and international distribution. Find out more about the Jump Card ID today at www.jumpmasterpress.com.
And there you go with Jump Master Press. And now moving over to our second sponsor of the evening, the wonderful folks at Per Bastet Publications. Happy Thanksgiving to Sarah Durrell, Marion Allen, and T. Lee Harris, three of our favorite people in the world. And they run a great multi-genre small press out of southern Indiana around the Louisville, close to Louisville area. Great Louisville metro area, I should say. So here's a little bit about them. Per Bastet Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With over 30 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bastet offers a little bit of everything. Check out Joanna Foreman's award-winning romantic thriller Riverwalk Chameleon, or try Ghost Tour Guides Jacob and Jenny Floyd's Louisville's Strange and Unusual Haunts and Indiana's Strange and Unusual Haunts. Travel back to ancient Egypt with T. Lee Harris as the eloquent scribe and see just how much trouble a temple cat can drag an innocent young scribe into. Or head for the future in Marion Allen's science fiction short story collection, Other Earth, Other Stars. You can find these titles and more at perbastetpublications.com. Timeless Tales Unfold. And that, I'll spell it out for you real quick. P-E-R. First word, second word, B-A-S-T-E-T, Per Bastet. Check them out. Great folks. very thankful for them. And yeah, so there we are back, and looks like our guest is on deck. And so we're going to, I say we go ahead and dive into this and give our guest our traditional, warm, exciting introduction. What do you say, Daniel? Does that sound like a plan?
Let's do this, man. We have a lot of things to go through and not enough time.
Yes, we do. And when you find out everything our guest does, yeah, we could probably do about a 3-hour show. But our guest tonight is a writer, an editor, a photographer, and wait for it, medieval reenactor. And he's got great series, science fiction series such as Void Incursion and Forgotten Fodder. Also does blogging, works with the Society for Creative Anachronism, where he teaches fencing and archery and much, much more. And I am very, very proud to bring onto the show tonight MJ Blayhart. And MJ, we are turning your mic on and welcome you to the Star Chamber show. Hello, sir.
Hi, guys. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the tech work.
On our Thanksgiving Eve specials, we're calling it. But hopefully that results
in
lots of extra listeners that are relaxing and taking it easy as they get ready for mayhem tomorrow. And definitely want to find out about you, and you and Holly has been telling us so about you, and I mean, she is just like, what do you see this guest that we've got coming on? And he's just got so much. And I'm like, and then I took a look at your bio and everything, and I was like, oh my God, yes, we're gonna cover a lot of topics. And as you probably heard in the intro, we're willing to talk about everything on the show. We even talked about chicken coops in the intro. So
I was catching that, yeah.
We're not afraid. Yeah, we're not afraid to cover all topics on the Star Chamber show, but it is the focus, of course, is on creatives, and you are definitely that. And so tell us, just to get that part underway, tell us a little bit about your writing and your series has looked really interesting, so I figured best to have you introduce them a little bit.
All right. Thank you very much, Kat. So I've been writing since I was 9. The first sci-fi story I came up with was an adventure called Wildfire, and it was all about how robots took over the world, and the kids eventually rebel, take out all the robots, and all the adults, and that story was when I was 9. It was 50 pages, it was illustrated, and I'm really glad no child psychologist ever got a hold of it, because I'm pretty sure that would have gone over so good. Right. They might have thought I was a little cracked there, but my love's always been sci-fi and fantasy. I was exposed to Star Wars when I was 5, and that pretty much did me in. And the first series I published, actually, is The Source Chronicles. I started writing this in 98, and it's an epic epic fantasy series, actually, that I started with. It's 2 books so far. The 3rd book is done, but I am very, very, very slowly editing it, much to my wife's chagrin. She'd like it done sooner rather than later. But I've been working on it for a while, but the series I've been focused on over the last year has been sci-fi, which was really always my first love. And a couple of years back, I had this idea that I really wanted to do something sci-fi that was different. I mean, we've all seen, you know, the last few years, sci-fi has really been, you know, you've got all the various Star Treks, which I love them, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan, and Firefly, which was amazing, but I loved Farscape, which was just such a cool show, and it sort of combined like the sci-fi fantasy thing, which I've always found really cool. So the Void Incursion was this idea of taking these very disparate characters and putting them together, having to face off against this invasion by an alien force that for a while is unidentified. It takes a bit to figure out who they are and what their motivation is, and they're not the only force from outside the galaxy that this all takes place in, but it kind of borrows from Star Wars and the idea of being in a galaxy far, far away. And it's been so much fun to write. And I started off writing and eventually reached a point where I said, hey, I think I got a book here, or 2 or 3 or 4. And I'm up to 4 at the moment. The 5th will close it. The first 2 books are available on Amazon. The first book is Opening Gambit, which I published back in May. And the 2nd book, which just came out a few weeks ago, is Critical Position, which is continues the story. It's a lot of fun. I've been having a lot of fun writing this, and the characters mixed between humans and various alien races. I even created a race that has no gender because I thought that would be kind of cool. They just, you know, they don't reproduce in the standard form. They actually use, I think I, if I remember right, my science I studied on this, it was parthenogenesis, so they can reproduce. So that's been a lot of fun, and that's the series that I've been working on the last couple of years. Started publishing this year. I plan to publish two more books in that series next year and hopefully finish it in 2022. And then I recently started a new series. This is Forgotten Fodder. I actually was using NaNoWriMo because I heard you guys talking about that a bit. I use NaNo as my impetus to write book two for this series. I did something I don't normally do. I'm normally a pantser as a writer. I'll sit down, I'll have an idea, I'll bang it out, and it's really, I come up with stuff, and it's a lot of fun, and I just write the way I write. For this series, I actually plotted it out in advance and started to really think about, well, where do I want this to go? And Forgotten Fodder is about time in our future, 550 years in the future. The story starts in 2572, and the human race has colonized space, and we created basically four separate governments. There's Earth, and the immediate solar system is one. And then these other three governments out there formed, and two of those three governments started a war with each other over territory. And that war, they decided rather than having normal people fight, they created clones to fight the war. And they created hundreds of thousands of clones using various people as their templates. And so they had different specialties. You had your infantry, you had your pilots, you had your medics, all those types of things. So you had all these clones fighting this enormous war. The third government that wasn't involved in the war decided they'd had enough, and the war had reached a point where it was very clear that they were just throwing out clones and fighting these ridiculous battles. So they intervened, overthrew the other two governments, formed a wholly new government, but now there were hundreds of thousands of clones out there with nothing to do. So they become this underclass, and they become these second-class citizens that are existing but have, like, no rights, and nobody cares about anything that happens to them. So now, 10 years after the war has ended, one clone witnesses a murder. And in the process of being this witness, he gets involved with the law enforcement agency that is sort of an intergalactic FBI. And he goes on this adventure where he winds up helping to solve the crime, which turns out wasn't a murder, it was an execution, and there's this enormous conspiracy that goes with it. And the first part of that series is going to be the four books exploring that conspiracy. The first book is called Unexpected Witness. I will be publishing it in February is my current plan, assuming that I get my edits done and to my editor before I miss any timing where he's not going to be able to get this done for me in time. And I am hoping to publish one every few months. My goal for 2021 is to publish six books. Ridiculously ambitious, but I've been working extra hard and really putting in a lot more effort into this. So I'm excited by all this. So that's a lot. I've been babbling at you guys for a bit here. So
No, it's good. And yeah, because this is for folks that we wanted to make sure they get a good sense for what you are all about with your fiction writing for sure. And I was interested to hear about your series after just reading a bit about them and going over your catalog too. Cause I mean, even folks will be interested to know that, not only do you have fiction titles, but I came across nonfiction titles in your at least on your Amazon page, and so you've got some books that are I think maybe, like, I got the sense of a little bit of kind of like a little bit of self help kind of books from in a way from when I was reading about You Are Amazing, Vortex Pilgrimage. I mean, it looks like you have some titles in that area too. So not only fiction, we're not only talking fiction tonight, but also nonfiction, which I think is pretty cool too.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I actually maintain a couple of blogs. I started blogging years ago now. I created a blog called The Ramblings of the Titanium Don, and I'll explain that. There's a whole story that goes with that, and that actually ties into the medieval reenactment I've been doing for the last 29 years. But one of the cool things I have been researching and really studying over the years this whole idea that consciousness creates reality and that you can build up your life really the way you'd like it to be. But a lot of people are kind of unconscious or subconscious, and they just kind of go through life and just doing what's expected of them and just kind of going by rote and living by routine and not really focused on anything they truly want to do. And so many people out there are just kind of miserable. And a lot of the self-help out there, a lot of the ideas get really hooky spooky and very new agey and not very approachable. And one of my thoughts was, I want to make this more approachable. I want to try to bring this into layman's terms and really talk about how it's something that anybody can make use of. And that's been a big part of my approach. So I started blogging about what I call pathwalking, which is my personal philosophy on how to consciously create the reality you want to live in. And I started doing this, it's going to be 9 years coming in January. I started this as my New Year's, it wasn't a resolution, I called it a New Year's action. So instead of resolving to do something, I took an action and I started blogging once a week. And that eventually evolved into 2 blogs a week and then 3. And then I discovered Medium.com. Medium is a great website for blogs, and there's topics on everything you can imagine. And I started writing there daily, and I post something to Medium every single day. And that's mostly focused on the conscious reality creation stuff. And I did a couple of books that focus on this as well. There's the You Are Amazing series, books 1 and 2. This just kind of ties into, I'm going to tangent a bit here. I'll write veritably anything. I write lots of different stuff. I've done business writing for companies. I've done a lot of web content work. I've written some things that were, well, one of my nano challenges many, many years ago was I decided to write the story of getting hit by a car while crossing a street and having to recover some pretty serious injuries. Because let me tell you, pedestrian versus car, guess who wins? Answer, not the pedestrian. So I had to recover from some pretty nasty injuries. And actually, that's part of where I'm going to tie back into my blog title. The Titanium Don comes from, I've been fencing with this medieval organization, with the Society for Creative Anachronism, for 29 years. And I attained a title through gaining something based, you know, in skill, because I don't entirely suck at this. I'm not uber super spectacular. But I've been fencing a long time, and I've taught a lot of people to fence, and I love this whole medieval combat thing. It's rapier combat. It is a lot of fun. It's the best hobby and the thing I miss the most during this pandemic, since we haven't been holding practices. But because of that accident, I have titanium plates in my right shoulder. My right clavicle is made of titanium. So, and I attained the rank of Don. It's a title I could use in the medieval thing. So I am the Titanium Don, as opposed to the Teflon Don.
Nice.
So I sort of played on that, but all of this ties into my writing. Even my fiction covers into this some of this stuff. I'm going so fast, I'm almost stumbling over my words. Let me slow myself down a bit here. and I like to talk about, like, a lot of my characters in the fantasy series, in the Source Chronicles. My main character is a sorcerer who loses his powers at the beginning of the story. And to recover them, he has to learn about himself and get in touch with who he is. And that's, you know, in great medieval epic fantasy series idea. But it's realistic in the idea that people can do this. You can get in touch with your own who you are and get to know yourself. And it's sort of my overall philosophy in life, is I like to try to be as genuine a person as I can be. And as you noticed, I do a lot of different things. I like to keep busy. And so I have tried to put a lot of these experiences into the writing I do, even when I'm working in fantasy, sci-fi, etc. It's sort of a great tapestry of work.
Well, your timing is perfect, because on just a few days ago, I had a friend over who's heavily into swords, and actually one of our folks in the chat room, Sandy Lender, also has a heavy interest in swords, and we were talking about sabers, and we were watching some good sparring footage of some folks doing some saber duels, but I was like, yeah, when I saw that, I was like, yeah, this is just perfect, because I guess you it's some of your fencing side is connected to the Society of Creative Anachronism, SCA, and there you also looks. I pointed out earlier that you also teach archery. So, yeah. So this is tell us a little bit about the fencing side though, and what. You know, what attracted you specifically to fencing? What about it? And how difficult is it for, say, somebody that might find it fascinating but has never done it before? What would be involved in getting into fencing? Because I think it's fascinating.
Hello.
Hello.
Did we lose him?
There you are.
Do you
sorry
hear
about
me?
That. There
okay.
we go. Sorry about that, guys.
Did I cut out?
I didn't mean to hit on my phone. That was
Oh, no. It was,
you
okay.
Guys still with me?
Okay. I was madly checking all my connections just now.
No, that was me.
I hope I didn't drop
that was
you.
All me, that one.
It's all right. But you know, that's the thing about live broadcasts. I always say it. You just never know what you're going to expect. I mean, I've even had shows
exactly.
where we've had tornado sirens go off right outside of my house while we're doing the show. So it, trust me, the unexpected happens. But I don't know if you – did you catch my question?
Yep.
It was a kind of elongated. But
yeah.
did you catch what I was asking, or do you want me to go over it
yeah,
again?
Yeah, I heard you guys. I inadvertently muted my phone. I hit the wrong button there. So
Okay.
Yeah, that was all me. So the fencing, I got involved in this when I was 19 as a freshman in college, and I got to, a friend of mine had been doing it in high school. The rules were a little different back then. He was also, I think he was 18 when he started, and he brought me to a meeting that was going on, and they were doing two kinds of combat that day, and there were the guys fencing on the one side, guys and women. It was a lot of different people. There was people fencing, and there's people hitting each other with rattan swords in armor. And he said to me, all right, you got a choice. So you can stay here and get poked or go over there and get bashed. And I looked at the guys hitting each other with armor and I looked at the people hitting each other with the fencing swords and said, yeah, I'll stay here and get poked. And over the years, I got to study a lot of different aspects of fencing because the primary weapons that we use are blades that we used to use, years ago, épées and foils, your standard Olympic fencing weapons. And over the years, we've evolved past that. Now we use heavier weapons. We used to call them schlagers. They're heavier rapier-style blades, much more like the historic 15th century, 16th century weaponry. And we do a lot with this. It's not just like Olympic fencing. You see people going up and down a strip, and they're wearing whites, and they're hitting each other with their swords. This is medieval. We fight in the round. We fight with more than one weapon at a time. So you'll see somebody fighting with a sword and a dagger, or a sword and a cloak, or a sword and a buckler that got like a small shield, or my personal favorite form, which is a sword in each hand, known as either Florentine or case of rapier. And you've got two swords, and you're out there fighting people with different weapons. And over the years, as the weapons have evolved, so have some of the styles. Like I actually have between my collection of weapons, and I have a bag of swords that are fencing legal. They're all tipped. It's a rubber tip. They're all blunt. We do our best not to hurt each other because we want our friends to keep fighting us.
Right.
One of my weapons is curved. So I fight, one of my swords is curved like a, it's much more like a saber. And the style fights differently because it's, you can do stuff with a curved blade you cannot do with a straight sword. One of the
mm-hmm.
weapons I played with a friend has a rapier katana. And it's actually a katana-style blade that can be used with our blades, and you can use them against each
wow.
other. Yeah, and it works out really well. There's new weapons coming down the pike right now in our area. We're using spears. We started experimenting with. People are starting to bring these in. Some of us have experimented with two-handed weapons. I have a two-handed sword that I will sometimes fight with. And you'll see a mix-up of the different kinds of weapons, and you'll have the two-handed versus the one-handed, or somebody fighting with two swords versus one, et cetera. You get a big mix, and it can be really cool because each of these weapons has such a uniquely different style. And the thing is, for somebody who's never done it before, we're really good about welcoming people in, and it doesn't matter what your body size is, it doesn't matter what your athletic ability is. When I came into this years ago, I was the short, fat kid who was picked last for most teams because didn't run very quick, wasn't very agile, and yet I was able to pick this up, and over the years, because I persisted and I really wanted to learn this game, I picked up a sense of the skill and eye-hand coordination and sense of situational awareness. And I've taught a lot of people how to do this over the years. I've become what we call a marshal, which are the people who keep everybody else safe in the game and make sure nobody gets hurt. But a lot of us also work as teachers and instructors, and I've been helping teach people this for years. And I've taught people who've never, ever picked up a weapon before how to fight and walk you through the basics of the footwork and the blade work and how the blade moves and how to figure out your distance from an extended arm to the wall or to the person that you're hitting, and you know what it takes to actually hit them, what kind of movement you need, you know. And it builds up. You build them a lot of muscle memory to do this. I mean, I haven't unfortunately been able to fight now for 10 months because of the pandemic. COVID's, you know, killed all our practices for the time being. And I still do some practices. I'll drill against the wall sometimes. I'll at least do some footwork drills at home. So it's a little different not being able to fight another opponent, but all the muscle memory is there. The second I pick up one of my swords, it's all still there. I mean, it also doesn't hurt that I've been doing this for 29 years, so it all builds up. But yeah, anybody can do it. And the society welcomes people. You know, the SCA is worldwide. We're all over the place. And it's a very welcoming organization. It's really open to all types of people, all ages. We've got, you know, I've taught people fencing who are 18 and 19. I've actually done some youth combat teachings with some 16 and 17-year-olds. The youngest student I ever had was 12. The kids don't fight the adults, but, you know, we still work with them and start teaching them. Because a lot of people, you know, who started playing this game when the society started years ago have kids of their own now, and they've raised their kids in the game, and so we try to keep them involved too. And there's a lot of different activities that go on, so it's a lot of fun. And this has been my primary hobby, like I said, for a very long time. And I've met people from all over the world playing this game, and it's a really great community of people.
Oh, definitely. Oh, go ahead, Daniel.
You there? So what kingdom are you in?
I'm in the Kingdom of the East. And so for anybody who doesn't know, the SCA breaks down into 20 kingdoms. It's currently 20. And various parts of the country and parts of the world make up the individual kingdoms. The East Kingdom is from Prince Edward Island all the way down to Delaware, half the state of New York, but not all of the state of New York, eastern part of Pennsylvania. And then other kingdoms encompass other parts of the country. There's the kingdom that encompasses Australia is called Lohawk, and that's Australia. There's a kingdom that encompasses most of Europe that is Drakenwald. And they all have, and you get a king and queen, and this is somebody, or king and king now is possible, or whatever, you know. But you basically get a sovereign and a consort, and they reign as the crown of the kingdom for 6 months. And that is determined nowadays by a crown tournament, which is the armored combat people who fight with rattan swords and put on a goodly amount of armor. The most impressive part being a full medieval helm. So it's a big, heavy metal helm, which you want because nobody wants to be concussed by being hit by sticks in the head. So that's a lot of protection there. And so there's a crown tournament that happens, and that's how you determine who the crown's going to be. That happens every 6 months. And so the people who serve as crown spend 6 months as the heirs to the sovereign and consort, and then 6 months as sovereign and consort. And then the whole thing cycles again and again. And in the East, the East Kingdom is now 53 or 4. It's the second oldest kingdom in the SCA. We've had, I believe, 105 crowns. It's either 104 or 105. And it's pretty vast.
Yeah. I graduated from SCA to the Mail Society years ago, and I started with SCA back in the late 70s and went on to become part of the Mail Society, and that's a total different thing than the SEA. I don't know if you've ever played with them or not.
I have not, actually.
They use live weapons, so they're blunted, but they're live weapons that they're using.
Yeah, I mean, there's some. I know there's been some experimentation with that in the SCA these days. I know that they're starting to move forward with some shifts. I believe, don't quote me on this one because this is not my usual ball of wax. But yeah, it's all. There's so many different organizations out there too that do this type of stuff. But that's cool.
Yeah, one of my instructors on. That I was taking some foiling with and some fencing. We were in a big warehouse and there was he was standing there talking to us with his foil just barely touching the ground. And a mouse came running across the floor a few feet away from him. And he didn't seem like he even looked at the mouse. And he just reached out there and just smacked and killed it right there. I was just like, okay,
oh,
you've done this before.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, I was just like, you know, mouse running across the floor and you snap his neck or his back, you know, while he's in full motion going across his concrete floor.
that's talent, I'll tell you. And,
yeah,
you know,
and there's some guys out there that are that talented, you know, when it comes to the fighting that, you know, even in the SEA, there's some guys that I fought that there was one kid that I fought one time that he made his own armor out of stainless steel. Mm-hmm. So it polished like silver. And in the sunlight and everything, you know, you couldn't hardly look at him because it actually hurt your eyes in a way. But if you knocked him down, he could be flat on his back and do a handspring into a standing position in full armor.
I've seen some of those guys. They're crazy.
And I was just like,
it's super cool.
When you pick up the stainless steel armor compared to the armor that I wore with, you know, the big helm and stuff that I wore, his armor probably weighed half of what mine did. I mean, I wore 90 pounds worth of armor when I was fighting.
One of the upsides of the fencing, our armor is definitely quite a bit lighter, although in some respects the heavier armor tends to breathe better because, you know, it's exposed to air more than ours is. One of the fortunate evolutions over the last couple of years, we have had an approved chainmail for armor, and I actually switched over to that a couple of years ago, and it's so nice. Especially in the summer when the breeze hits you and it blows right through, and it's nice. You've got, you know, sweating to death in four layers of trigger cloth.
Something underneath it to keep it from chafing your skin. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I always, you know, got a good Under Armour shirt under the armor, and you know, make sure you're not, you know, ending up with that funky grid pattern on your chest after you've been hit a few times.
Yeah. Do you make your own armor? Or you buy it.
I buy it with my own money. I know some very talented people who can make garb and armor and stuff like that, and I do not have that kind of talent. I battle the people who are better at that than I am. I'm more than happy to pay for stuff like that because yeah, I can't do that.
I made all my armor for my helm because the helm took, you know. The thickness of the helm and everything, I didn't have a forge good enough to heat up the metal properly to actually beat it outright. I went over to another guy's place and he had all the stuff and I started the helm there and he finished it up for me and everything because he was a whole lot better at doing that than what I was.
Yeah, that's some specialized. That's some specialized tooling and everything that goes into that too. So
yeah, and I made all my own chainmail and stuff. So
that's cool.
I used a 4-1 chainmail. So
Yeah, I was going to say, chainmail is a painstaking process. I mean, that takes some time to make a chainmail shirt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's if anybody's ever done that, link by link by link, that's an art.
Yeah, I mean,
this
stuff that a lot of us are using for fencing has been, it's totally commercial, it's machine-made commercial stuff that I think has been used also for, like, divers dealing with sharks. So,
yeah.
Which is a lot easier. You know, it's got to be a fairly thin, you got to have a fairly fine mesh when you're dealing with fencing weapons because, you know, while the blades themselves are blunted and everything, if you break a weapon, that's when it becomes a little more dangerous. They tend to break flat, thankfully. Knock on wood, over the years, having had a couple of weapons broken on me, I've never been injured by a broken weapon. It happens. It's rare, but it does happen because, you know, when you're fighting with these things, they are metal and they will fatigue or you'll catch them at the right angle or whatever. I made the mistake once of commenting about how the one blade I was fighting with was 20 years old and a couple days later it snapped. Sometimes when I get to making that comment. Great. Brag about that one and see how that goes.
Yeah, with the purity of the steel, too, and getting rid of the slag in it and so forth. I mean, it can make a big difference. And, how some of those forged blades can hold up and others, you know, they got a good documentary on, I want to tell you the accurate information, Disney. You all get the Disney one. They've got a great documentary on Viking swords talking about the Ulfbert swords, and it does cover that exact topic quite a bit, you know, as far as the quality of the iron steel, you know, and then, you know, what happens, you know, if it's got impurities in it versus, you know, steel that's been, definitely more of a purified process and how it holds up, the strength of the steel. So I found that just extremely interesting.
Yeah. You know, going to spring steel or going to Damascus, and it's just those two differences are when you're fighting with them, you have to understand that the spring steel is actually going to whip a little bit over what the Damascus will, and you know that. That can be good or it can be bad, depending on who you're fighting.
Yeah. And I mean, some of the rapiers that we get a hold of, some of the blades that we use are whippier than others. Some of them kind of do what I call kind of a wobbly thing. Some of the longer blades tend to wobble a bunch. And you get a real difference in what you can do with a weapon depending on the length of the sword, which historically builds into the way you would fight with the blade. I tend to fight with shorter blades, partially because I'm short, and while I could compensate by fighting with a longer blade, for my size, I fight with a blade that's pretty much height appropriate for me, based on whichever one of the medieval masters you look at. There's so many different theorems about, you know, what the length of your sword should be and how you should measure, etc. So, and the blades themselves, how they're composed, definitely impacts how they're going to fight. So,
when I was fighting, I fought with a full kite and bastard. So, that was my weapon to fight with, and I tried fighting your way with two swords, and that if you do not have good coordination with both hands, that is not your thing.
No, and you have to move a lot with that. You can't stay still because you've got less defense because you don't have that shield, so you got to move around a whole bunch, and it affects, especially when you're fighting with the heavier style of combat and the heavier armor, you can't do what I call siege towering. You can't get behind your shield and, you know, try to throw shots while blocking at the same time. You got to just keep moving. Some of the best guys you can fight with that stuff, it's fun to watch. I put on the armor once, I let them hit me and went, yeah, that's nice, I don't want to do this. I love throwing the shots from that version of the combat, but it's not for me. But I've always been interested in watching the fights, and I've watched so many crown tournaments over the years and other heavy combat tournaments, and at Penzic, which is our big event every August in Pennsylvania. I've gotten to watch I've gotten to line marshal multiple field battles, and that's just the most incredible thing to watch when you've got hundreds on one side, hundreds on the other side, a cannon goes off and they all crash in the middle. And it is wild, it is loud, it is just so much fun to observe. And it's like, yeah, I see the adrenaline rush of this, and if I could play that version of the game, if I liked playing that version of the game, I could see the appeal. You know, and when we do the same thing with rapiers, it's not quite as impressive. We do it. We still have melee combats, but they're definitely a very different animal.
Yeah, it's totally different with rapiers than it is broadsword or any of the rest of those. One of the guys that I used to fight against in SEA, he fought with double mace. And
yeah, that's definitely a stylistic choice.
He was sadistic. I was fighting him one time, and the match had been called, and they called it in my favor. And as I was walking away from him, he took both of his maces and came right up underneath the back of the base of my helm into the base of my neck and stuff. And his comment was, "Never turn your back on your opponent." I'm like, if there weren't kids here, I would tear into you right now, boy.
Well, I'll tell you what, Daniel. What I know you do need is a steel top hat. That's going to be your next project. Yeah, to go with what you currently are.
No. I can tell a man that's never worn a pure steel helm then. You know,
no, I've worn barrel helm. I have worn a barrel helm. I love barrel helms, but yeah, I haven't worn all styles of full helms, but I have worn a barrel helm. Yeah, those are fun.
Yeah,
we do have proof, by the way, that being on the Star Chamber show does increase the sales of our guests, RG Westerman, who's actually on other shows, is actually one of our co-host family, is listening in tonight and just chimed in the chat room that she just picked up Path Walking on Kindle. So says Modern Philosophy is one of her jams. So that is objective, irrefutable proof that, yeah, your sales did increase by being on the Star Chamber show. That's a factual statement. Now
I appreciate that.
Back to the discussion. And hi to Clayton.
COVID.
Yeah, but definitely I want to shout out to
you had sales during COVID. So
right, yes, sales during COVID. Yeah, and poor Clayton. He's a great author, but he also works in the healthcare world, and he just joined in. And he's down in Tennessee, but he's done 120 plus IVs each day over the last two because they've had a pretty good sized breakout of COVID in his county. So he's been definitely. He's down. I want to say he's near Nashville. I want to say, but Clayton, if I'm wrong, just correct me on that. As far as where in Tennessee you are, I could be wrong about that. But you're down. I know you're down in Tennessee. So, yeah, I think, or maybe
Clayton? That's a tough job to do too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I would not want to be in
pharmacy technician.
Right.
Yeah, he's a pharmacy technician. So, but he is listening. Yeah, he just joined us. And I know he's finding this fact. He loves combat stuff. So, yeah, I know he's listening to this very carefully. But I did get a question from RG while we're at it.
Two of my old swords. One of them that he's got is a sword that when my daughter, when one of my daughters was starting to date good, I'd been doing katans out in the yard and everything with it. And I was sitting there polishing up the blades and stuff like that after handling and stuff, sitting up there. And it was one of them that I kept, you know, decently sharp in case I needed to go out and cut down, you know, bushes or trees or anything like that with it too. And sitting up on the front porch and I'm sitting there polishing it. The kid pulls up in a truck And he gets out of the truck, and he's walking up to the stairs, and he hasn't really paid me any attention until he starts to step up on the first step to get up on the porch. And he looks, and his foot's already on that first step. And he takes his foot back off that first step and backs up about 3 paces there, goes, and asked if my daughter was there. I'm like, and I looked over at his truck, and it had a big old dent in the side of his, the bed of the truck. I said, I go, who's asking? He goes, I'm so-and-so, and I was here to pick her up for our date. He goes, I go, you can't drive any better than having a big old dent like that in your truck. You think I'm going to let you take her, my daughter out? My daughter was out on the front porch. Daddy, leave him alone. So, you know, fencing and broadswords and stuff like that, if you have a daughter that you don't want to date, you know, be sitting out there, you know, polishing up a big old sword and everything when their boyfriend comes up, it can slow that down a little bit.
Oh, sure.
No kidding. And I have to apologize, Clayton. I really screwed up with Clayton. I thought Tennessee, because a lot of his novels have a lot of action set around Knoxville, Tennessee. So I had it in my head that he was from Tennessee, but he's actually from Licking County, Central Ohio. So that was a case of the story gave me the idea that he was from Tennessee.
A little bit different, but Stephen.
I know, but there is a reason, because it was ground into my head when reading his work that it was, I saw a lot of Tennessee and Knoxville, so it is, it's understandable, but yeah, he's up in Licking County, Ohio, so, oh man, but we will get on to one more question here, and it's a good one for newbies, folks that have never approached SCA, or, you know, getting this, might find some of the conversation we're having tonight interesting. R.G. Westerman asked, how might one find and join a local SCA chapter? Do you have any advice on that, how to approach them, the right questions to ask if you're, like, brand new? What would you advise?
I actually used to be one of my local groups. I was the newbie liaison. We refer to that office as the Shadowland. That is the person who you would approach. If you go to SCA.org, and it's that easy, SCA.org, on the website you will find resources to help you connect to your local group. You can find out where your local group is from there. You'll see what kingdom you're a part of, what local group you're a part of, and when you look at that information, the person you want to reach out to is the Shadowland. That is the newcomer liaison. They are the ones for anybody who is interested in getting into the game and finding out all the various things that we do, because the combat is just a part of it. I mean, that's awesome and a lot of fun, but there's also anything medieval you can think of, somebody does. You've got medieval cooking. You've got all of the types of arts. There's a lot of people who do calligraphy and illumination. They make beautiful award scrolls for people when they get awards. You've got people who make amazing garb and stuff. And the Shadowland is the person you want to go to. You also have people who research, you know, stuff that's a little funkier. My wife, for example, researches all things hygiene. And actually her first bit of research was into everything people used before toilet paper. That was actually a research project she did. She wrote a whole paper about it, presented it for Arts and Science, you know, stuff that people wouldn't think about, but she was curious. That was her question. So people do a little bit of everything. You can find out what kingdom you're in, what your local group would be. And we're really big on welcoming anybody who's interested. We are, you know, we've grown through word of mouth. We've grown through people, you know, getting involved over the years. Kids who grew up in the SCA a lot of times stay with it, because we really are just this community of people who, you know, have this common interest. And it goes to a lot of different places, and a lot of it connects to stuff like the writing. And there's a lot of artist types, a lot of creatives in the SCAs, also a lot of computer tech people, a lot of teachers. But yeah, the best way for somebody new to get involved is definitely check out SCA.org. There are resources there, and you can find out where your local group is and reach out to the local group Shadowland. That's the person who will tell you everything you want to know about where you can get involved, where the practices are, who you can contact, and you know, we're really big on helping people get into this. So lots of friendly people. You can just ask anything you want to ask, you know, how do I go to practice? You don't need to get dressed up just to go to a practice. People will help you with garb. A lot of times we'll have what we refer to as gold key, which is garb that people have donated or people bring for people who don't have their own. So we can dress you up at events when we do weekend events. But like practices and stuff is a little more informal. We generally, you know, we'll loan you armor until you get into it to the point where you buy your own. The group I fence with, we have a closet of weaponry and jackets and stuff so we can help people out. I've loaned out my weapons on way more occasions than I can count at this point when we didn't have a loaner blade available. So yeah, it's open for people. We're really good about welcoming new people in. So lots of opportunities.
Very cool. Thank you.
I just realized something. We're in the talk right now, and today has prepared me for this talk, whether I knew it or not. I was watching TV earlier, and it was on, you know, finding a house over in, you know, England and Wales and that area. The guy that was on there, he went into to one of the castles where they have jousting and everything over there all the time. And the guy was there, you know, making a helm, and he's like, how long does it take you to make this helm? You know, he's like letting him try it, you know, hammer on it a little bit. He goes, a helm like that will take, you know, minimum of 30 hours hammering.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm sitting there, I just happened to look at the cigar I'm smoking tonight. It's called Long Live the King.
It all ties together, right?
Yeah. All goes, you know, today was my, you know, think about SEA again, you know, that you haven't thought about in, you know, 15 or 20 years, really, on all the fun that you used to have back then. And if you're ever down here in May, it got canceled this year because of COVID and everything. But Castle Gwyn, we have the, you know, Renaissance Festival in May on every weekend. And the guy that owns Castle Gwyn actually used to date my sister in high school. So, and it is a beautiful castle now. It started out as like one tower, then he built, you know, another tower and a little bit in between the towers and stuff, and it's two huge towers and everything with the brass, you know, roofing on and all that type of stuff and the flags, and it's a beautiful castle now, all white. And he studied castles and stuff like that over in Europe, and that was his dream that he had when he was in high school, was to own a castle and live in it, and now he does.
That's cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, that is very cool.
Well,
if you're ever driving through Nashville area and you find 840 in between Murfreesboro and Franklin, you can see his castle from the interstate.
Cool.
If you can keep that in mind, if you're ever coming through here and you want something to see that you'll really appreciate, just take that one little strip of interstate and you'll be able to see his castle sitting, because the interstate came through and took his backyard, basically. They used to have the event every year on his property on one side of the road that was, you know, around the castle and down in the woods and all that stuff. And now they have to have that on one side of the road because he had to get the property on the other side of the road. And
right.
Have the castle on where it was already being built at. So, but it's about
very
like,
cool.
You know, a couple hundred feet from the back of the castle is where they cut through for the interstate.
That's always unfortunate. Gosh, remember that?
Well, I
want to
ask
through that way. I've been down there in eons.
Well, it's not exactly a historically styled castle, but we do have a castle just outside of Lexington when you're driving in on Versailles Road, and it's called Castle Post. So yeah, look it up. But yeah, we actually do have a castle in Lexington as well, and it's not
it's a hotel now.
Not historical, but it's fun.
Right.
I know you've seen it, Daniel. I know you've seen it, but I wanted to ask.
You can stay in.
Yeah. It's like a hotel. Yeah, each of the turrets, towers in the corners. Yeah, they have. They're set up for guests and stuff, so you can stay at it and have events, and they do a lot of stuff like that out there. But it is cool, for sure. It's got a big story behind it, but I won't waste time by going through the whole thing. It's a long story, but look it up. It's called Castle Post. It is very cool. But I do want to ask you about the archery side of things, because I was curious as to, your particular area. Are we talking like a single stab, like longbows, or are we talking recurve bows, like the Hunnic bows and Turkish bows and things like that? Or are we talking compound bows? What type of archery are you into, and what type do you instruct in? Because that's awesome, too.
Yeah, so all that, I do all that through the SCA as well. I also do archery. I shoot a recurve. I've shot compound in a bunch of years, but I shoot recurve, and I've helped teach people to shoot. I do less of that now than I used to. I got more into that about 10 years ago. I haven't been as active over the last few years. I moved to an area where we have slightly fewer archery people locally, so haven't been as involved in the last few years, but I've helped teach people just some of the basics of shooting, getting the idea of, always having the same knock point and, not overcorrecting when you're aiming, because it's really easy to overcorrect, especially when you're shooting at a 20-yard target. 2 or 3 degrees will throw your arrow way off target. So I've worked a bit with that. I've had the privilege of shooting with my recurve. I've gotten to shoot a couple of crossbows, which are always fun. I got friends who shoot Turkish bows. I know several people who shoot longbows. I wouldn't want to have to draw that much, depending on the draw. Nobody I know is drawing more than about 50, 60 pounds maximum. For target archery, I have really seldom much reason to go beyond that. But I know I've drawn heavier. It's just, if you're going to be shooting repeatedly at the same target, there's just no point in exhausting yourself by playing with that much, but having that much power, trying to take down an animal or anything. So, and that's always a lot of fun. With the SCA, it's always been target archery. There are people I know who do combat archery. That's more of, they're also going to be armored up like the people doing heavy combat. And they shoot lighter poundage bows. I know there's a restriction. I don't remember the exact rules. And they shoot
like 25 pounds.
I think they can't draw more than, I think it's like a maximum of like 35, 40 pound draw, because you don't want to hurt anybody. Obviously we don't want anybody to actually get hurt doing this. We're cognizant of that. We don't want to beat each other up so we can't keep doing this. So the combat archery people have, they also shoot arrows that are specially tipped, so that they can't really do a lot of injury. You'll just notice you got hit and, take it as it would have been, piercing the armor, doing damage, et cetera. I've never done
that.
What
we call duck arrows for that, which were a big rubber-tipped arrow. It had like a ball on the end of it, except it was like almost like a stopper that you would use on a cane on the end of the arrow. So when it hit somebody and everything, it didn't really hurt them. You knew you got hit by it, but you didn't get hurt. And back when I was doing it all the time, when it was still over at Castle Gwyn, one of the games that we did was me and some other guys would get behind like bales of hay stacked up like they were, with boards and stuff in front of it, like we're in a castle. And they were all painted up to look like, block and stuff like that, for stone for the castle. And we sit there and taunt people, to get them to shoot us. And you know, sort of like the old, you know, dunk tank type thing that, you know, you taunt somebody, you know, get them all frustrated and everything, and then they couldn't hit nothing.
Right. That's, you know, sometimes you taunting an enemy is a darn good way to get them to make a really dumb mistake.
Yes, most definitely.
We used to love doing that and everything, because the SEA basically, you know, when it came down to the medieval part of it, back when Castle Gwyn was first starting the Renaissance Festival, you know, SEA is the ones that, you know, basically, you know, came in there and made it fun. You know, they're the ones that are walking around, you know, being their normal selves, and people would have fun with it. Nowadays, it's gotten so commercial. Another company's actually taken it over, and they jacked the prices up on getting into the place and all that stuff for each weekend. That it's almost not as any fun anymore. It's more, you know,
it's
commercialized.
I always find it unfortunate when the rent fairs get just way too commercialized and it's really expensive to get into them. It's like, I want to do that, but, you know, one of the nice things about the SCA is, you know, A, it's participatory, which, you know, if you don't want to participate and you just want to go and adventure it, it's a little bit different. You know, it's a lot more affordable in that respect, which helps.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, back when he started, you know, the whole event, it was done by, you know, he got the SCA involved in it and everything, and we come out there and, you know, do it, be our normal selves and everything, our crazy selves, and, you know, people loved it. And then when it got taken over by some company that does, like, you know, events, they jacked up the prices almost immediately, and, you know, they hired the guys to do jousting from, like, Florida to come up. There's a big jousting school down there, you know, to come up and do the jousting and all that type of stuff, which is fun to watch, that part of it, but it's changed the whole atmosphere of it, in my opinion.
Yeah. It's definitely a different world when it's more commercialized like that. It definitely makes a difference. And, you know, I've been part of a couple of Ren fairs where, yeah, the SCA participated to help bring color and flair to the event. And those are always just, there's a lot of fun with that. And I mean, that's the whole reason why we do this stuff. This is fun. We do this as a hobby. It can be something of a lifestyle, but it's a hobby and it's a lot of fun. And, you know, one of the best things I get out of doing this, you know, that's been really helpful with the writing, and look at me taking this around to a circle here. It's helped me whenever I write any combat scenes, I've done enough of the actual combat, both individual one-on-one and in team situations in melee combat, that when I'm writing scenes, I visualize very clearly, okay, this is where these guys would be positioned, this is how this would move, and really try to work that into the story to make it very realistic and explain this is why this is happening this way, this is how these forces are moving. And a lot of that can be a real challenge. I've actually, on a couple of groups I'm on Facebook, every now and then when somebody's asked a question about combat, I'm always happy to jump in and lend a little bit of information if I can, because I've been very fortunate to have this experience and watch actual combat happen enough to be able to say, yeah, when you're in this situation, this is how this is going to work, this is how this is not going to work, and it definitely makes, when you're writing about this kind of thing, it makes it easier to, when you can visualize it, put that to words to explain to other people, which has always made, when I get into fight scenes in my stories, it's a lot more fun. It's a little more challenging when you're dealing with space fighting, obviously, but still, a lot of principles of combat apply no matter what kind of combat you're doing. Situational awareness is always important. The KISS principle, you got to keep it simple, stupid, because if you overthink it, you're going to crash into yourself real fast. So all of this applies to any kind of combat. It's always fascinated me, and it's funny because I have zero military background, but I've read a lot, and 20-plus years of actually participating in this stuff has changed my perspective on it. So it all blends very nicely.
I know as long as you've been into it and everything, you probably remember the story of out in California where they're having a big SEA battlement, and the Hell's Angels, I think it was the Hell's Angels that came out there and thought they were going to just, take over the place, and got their asses handed to them by a bunch of, medieval geeks. Yeah.
Yeah. There's always,
where in California that happened, but it was just hilarious to me when I first heard about it.
I've heard that story. we're not to be trifled with. We're, we're doing this for fun, but we've learned a lot through it. And you can actually apply a lot of this stuff to real life in certain ways. So that's always kind of cool.
Very nice.
All the angels wanted to be badasses and stuff, and they're like, "We're in full armor." Okay. Let's play.
Yeah, I want to research that story. That sounds pretty fun as far as looking into that lore. That's awesome. But we're coming up on about 14 minutes left in the show, so I wanted to make sure we kind of cover as many bases as we can, because I don't think we can cover all your interests, because you have about a million, I think, if I'm reading you correctly. But the photography, because I know that is listed high on your list of activities. Tell us a little bit about your photography endeavors and what you get into in that front.
So for me, it's always been about nature photography, specifically great trails, great vistas. I love taking pictures of when I go on hikes, and I love hiking. It's one of my favorite hobbies is to go out on hikes and hike some really cool trails. There's something about the natural scenery. There's something about a landscape that just is exciting to me. And sometimes when you find like a micro version of it, if somebody has put some sort of a structure together, like when I've been on hikes and people have built little stone monoliths together, they put up rock piles that just look really cool. That's the kind of photography I've always been into. And I am very much an amateur. I haven't had a full professional camera rig in eons, but iPhones are really powerful, which is great. And I take a lot of pictures for my blog. For my blog, a lot of the pictures I use are my own. For Medium, I use a couple of different resources, which I always cite when I'm using them. But I have seen some really cool sites while hiking. I've been to a couple of very cool waterfalls. I've hiked Sedona, Arizona a couple of different times, and the red rock structures of Sedona are just beautiful. And there's something about the nature and something about the way everything sets up that's just, it's hard to explain, because it's not just a sight, it's a sense, it's a feeling. There's an energy to it that I've always felt sort of a connection to nature. I'm a big fan of being outdoors. I love summertime because I get to be outside more. I like getting to experience these places, and that's what I like to take pictures of. I love to take photos of water. I got a lot of photos of lakes and rivers and streams and waterfalls, and that's always the stuff. I like the motion. I like trying to capture the motion into a still life. And like I said, I'm very much an amateur photographer. I've taken lots and lots and lots of pictures over the years. I have rolls of I've got lots of old photographs hidden around here somewhere in storage. And then my iPhone's just full of pictures. I've also got a lot of digital stuff. And it's something that always – I love capturing sights. I love capturing the natural stuff. I'm not a big fan of – I don't do portraiture or anything like that. But and a lot of times it'll inspire scenes and ideas for what a place might look like when I'm writing something. So it all kind of ties together. And I love that all this stuff is interconnected. So that's kind of my approach to photography.
Very cool.
Do you not take pictures at the melees and stuff?
I have a few really good pictures from some of those I've been in. I don't, you know, when I'm fighting, it's impossible to take a good picture. Plus, I don't want to ruin, you know, any device I'm using. But I've got a couple of really great shots over the years from the really big battles that I've marshaled. I've had the privilege to be a line marshal, and what that for me has been is I stand on the edge of the field and make sure that anybody watching the fight doesn't get hurt. I'm the line between, you know, the combatants and the non-combatants observing. And I tend to pick a spot when I did this regularly that almost always saw combat, and the combatants usually wound up right up against me to the point where I'm standing on a hay bale a foot away from the guys swinging their weapons. And I've taken photos where it looks like I'm in the heat of the battle because I'm right there on top of it, which has always been cool. Got to be careful doing that because, again, A, I'm making sure nobody gets hurt, and B, I don't want to damage my equipment while doing it. But it's something I've had that chance to take pictures of some of that stuff, and, you know, the pageantry that goes into the medieval stuff I've gotten to take pictures of along the way. So it's just sort of ties into everything else I like doing. I like to think I have a halfway decent eye for finding great angles to shoot from and such. I'm not afraid to, you know, drop to the ground if I can get a great shot from a prone position over, you know, standing there trying to look down at something. So, yeah, there's a lot in that.
You're talking about nature and everything. I wish that when I was a kid that they had iPhones and stuff like that where we could have taken pictures. One place I've never been back to that I am dying to go back to is out in the area where you're talking about, in a way, and that's the Petrified Forest.
And,
you know, it was just beautiful out there, something that you can't really describe adequately. You know, if you've never seen it, it's, you know, something that's sort of hard to really describe what it is and, you know, everything. But have you been out to, you say you went out to Sedona and stuff. Have you been out to the Petrified Forest and Grand Canyon and all that area?
I haven't been to the Petrified Forest. I've been to the Grand Canyon. I've been very fortunate. I have been to 43 out of 50 states. So I've gotten to see a wide swath of the country. And the Southwest is just amazing. And I mean, one of the places I really want to visit is Utah and see some of those just gorgeous. I know there's some beautiful hiking trails out there and some fantastic sites I'd love to see. I've seen the Grand Canyon. I got some fantastic, I actually got up at sunrise to watch the sun come up over the canyon the time I visited it. I have some fantastic sunrise photos. Actually on my blog, on the cover of my blog, on my homepage, the background image I shot, and it kind of looks like there's smoke over the canyon, and it's just the clouds as the sun rose. It was gorgeous. And the Petrified Forest is something I want to see. I haven't actually been there, but I want to go at some point. Those are some sites that just, if you've never seen it, describing what that looks like, it's hard to picture if you've never seen. Just it's these colors that don't seem natural. It doesn't feel right. Like, how is it so red and orange, and the dominant color is just not what you see in other parts of the country or even other parts of Arizona. It's quite different. And the canyon is just, the Grand Canyon is something you see pictures and you're like, yeah, that's cool, and then you see it up close and go, that's not what you thought it was. It's so much bigger than photos do justice of it. It's
right.
So impressive. You know,
yeah, and
the last way about Mount
was 13 when I went out there, so that was, you know, back in the 70s. So, you know, and I've always wanted to go back to those areas and everything. I just never have. And, you know, and like the closest thing I've got here is going down to like Cloudland Canyon, which is a Georgia state park, but it's like in between Georgia and Tennessee.
Yeah,
and it is a wooded canyon that has waterfalls and everything down in the bottom of it. You would love it if you enjoy hiking and stuff like that, because you can hike all the way down to the waterfalls and everything down in the bottom of it, with the swing bridges and stuff like that.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, we got some good trails around. I'm just outside of Philadelphia in New Jersey, and there's some good paths and trails around here. And then when you head up into like southern New York, getting into the upstate portion outside of the city, there's some really great trails and waterfalls. And when you get up around like Mohonk Mountain, there's some just beautiful hikes and some amazing scenery up there. And it's neat. You know, I love to find new places to explore, because it's fun to find the connections in the world like that. It never ceases to amaze me how diverse this one country is scenery wise. So,
talking about New York, everybody thinks of the city, but you go up in upstate New York and everything, like where the Finger Lakes are and stuff like that.
The Catskills.
It's so much different. And there was one park that I went to up there, and I don't know what the name of it is, but it's got like 26 waterfalls in that one park.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. I've been there, and I'm blanking on the name now myself. I know what you're talking about though. And there's, upstate New York.
But it's a wonderful park.
Stuff.
You can walk under the waterfalls, above the waterfalls, everything else. And just, you know, they had trails that just went all through all that. That was just wonderful. But like I say, I can't remember what the name of it was, but it was, you know, that was still prior to me having the cell phones that we've got today and everything, where you just sit there and snap pictures, you know, of everything, save it. You had your camera, and, you know, is that a picture that I really want to take? oh, crap, it's my thumb.
That was the worst back then. Like, yeah, it was a great shot I got on my thumb. What? No, that's not cool.
Well, you got some recommendations in from the chat room. Clayton is suggesting that Arches National Park and around Moab, Utah, and also Bandelier National Park outside Los Alamos, New Mexico. He's saying that one is excellent hiking. So, yeah, there's some suggestions that Clayton thinks you might enjoy if you haven't been there, those places already. You mentioned wanting to see some new places. Yeah. Yeah, because Clayton evidently has a Western background, which I am not aware of. Of course, I botched where he is from, but yeah, he evidently grew up out west, so yeah, he's got some Western knowledge. So, so hey, we're getting up to speed on Clayton lore. But coming up at about 2:20 or so, I want to MJ. Give folks some contacts where they can connect with you online and find you and pursue all your catalog.
Cool. So if you go to Amazon and you look up MJ Blehart, you will find me there. My last name is spelled exactly like it sounds, Blehart. My website is mjblehart.com. I keep a blog there weekly. I also have links to the rest of my blogs and my catalog on Amazon. I can be reached on Twitter and Instagram at MJ Blehart, and I can be reached on Facebook at Blehart MJ. For various reasons, I had to reverse it because I don't remember why. I think that's pretty much everywhere you can find me out there. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm not hard to find. and I'm always happy to connect with people and really see, you know, I love finding out what my readers want to know. I'm always happy to connect with people, talk about the SEA or talk about the conscious reality creation, mindfulness stuff that I blog about. And yeah, I'm always happy to meet new people. And, you know, I really appreciate having this opportunity to come here and talk with you guys tonight. I really do appreciate this. Thank you.
And give me the website one more time real quickly. How much type it in the chat room?
Right. It is MJBlehart.com. M as in Mary, okay. J as in John.
So make sure I get that in the chat room. Clayton was asking about that. But I will go ahead and I will sign off, and I'll turn it over to you, MJ, to say your last words. Cool. And then Daniel, take us out. But this is Stephen Zimmer, and have a happy Thanksgiving tomorrow, everyone. See y'all next Wednesday for another edition of the Star Chamber Show live podcast. On to you, MJ, and then Daniel, take us out.
Thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure here. Please feel free to check out my website, and I hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving. Once again, it's mjbleehart.com. And then feel free to visit my page on Amazon. And I think that's all I got. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, MJ. And this is Daniel Dark. And if you have enjoyed tonight's talk and you think you want to join the SEA or any other great organization like that, you know, just look them up and find out what you can find out about the organizations. There are so many wonderful things that the creatives can get involved in that can help you with your creativity. And until we get a chance to talk again next week, this is Daniel Dark signing out.